Only three basketball games left in the season. That is a sad thing. The basketball we have had has been very good, very entertaining, and hopefully we have quite the crescendo of a conclusion this coming weekend with the Final Four in the National Championship game. CBB Central Pod back at you one more time with basketball games upcoming to discuss. And Brad, how did you enjoy your Saturday, Sunday Sweet 16? And of course, the Elite Eight on Monday and Tuesday. It was hilarious watching everybody be like, oh my God, look how great the ratings were for the Sweet 16.
I was literally just about to say that. I mean, what a bunch of fools. I mean, you couldn't tell. Okay, yeah, the ratings are better on a Saturday, Sunday standalone all day than jamming them up Thursday and Friday. And then Monday and Tuesday got crushed. I mean, you saw that a mile away. The NCAA tournament's down 12% overall, right? They're down 12%, and the Elite Eight was down 45%, which is, I mean, both are pretty huge numbers there. I mean, people taking the victory lap.
Not significantly off of what other leagues have dealt with, though.
Right, but we're on our, you know, for the most part, we're on schedule. You know, we kind of switched a day here and there. But we were pretty much on schedule. Pandemic's almost over. The vaccines are rolling out. And we got people taking a victory lap because the Sweet 16, you know, got a better matchup. It's unbelievable. Ratings are down, people. Wake up. Not good.
Regardless of the ratings, I thought it was, you know, pretty entertaining weekend of basketball. Some of the games were very good. Some of the games were not very good. Part of that is there are some teams that are just, you know, on a different level, namely Gonzaga. Like, they're just different. But it was a fun weekend. I still can't believe that I got talked into throwing a few bucks over at the Bovada Sportsbook on USC over Gonzaga. Or not on the money line, just to cover. I was like, you know, that's an awfully large number for a team that's top 10 in the country in KenPom. And it did not turn out to be an awfully large number.
I was doing the same thing with the Creighton game. It was 13.5 point spread. I was thinking about putting some money down on Bovada. I did not, and that was a wise decision because I think Creighton played them better than the USC did. But after Zagorowski was red hot in the first half, Creighton came crashing down to earth. And now Gonzaga gets to play UCLA, which I'm still convinced is a fraud. I can't wrap my brain around UCLA or Oregon State. That Oregon State-Houston game, you know, I started off like what are we doing here? Like why are we watching Oregon State in the Elite Eight? And the game actually got pretty good by the end. You know, I don't mind a lot of these games that aren't super close or aren't, you know, one possession. Like I enjoyed watching Gonzaga Creighton. I enjoyed watching Michigan Florida State. Yep. And conversely, right, the Loyola Oregon State game was very close, and 75% of that game I wanted to shut off. I was not feeling it until like 6 minutes left.
See, I enjoyed the entire second half of that game. The first half was awful, but the second half, like the entire time Loyola was trying to make a push. And you felt it. I thought there was an energy to it. But, no, I mean, it was definitely odd, like, having Oregon State, you know, making the run it made. Like, it was odd having Oral Roberts. Oral Roberts wound up being one of the more entertaining games of the, you know, Oral Roberts, Arkansas turned out to be one of the most entertaining games of the tournament. I thought that was a trivia. It feels way longer ago than whatever it was, 4 days since that happened. But the our friends over at Oral Bob couldn't quite pull it off. Max Asemus and the Golden Eagles had the shot roll off at the horn, let Arkansas go to the Elite Eight. There was a lot of fun basketball. You know, some higher scoring games, some lower scoring games, some faster paced, some lower slower paced games. In the end, we have a relatively chalky Final Four with, you know, 2-1 seeds, a 2 seed, and then of course the random 11 seed. And UCLA, who could have seen that coming? Let's start with that, Brad. I mean, this is, you know, one of the stories of the tournament. You know, Mick Cronin in year two, taking UCLA to the Final Four, 5 wins by beating, you know, Michigan State, BYU, Abilene Christian, Alabama, and Michigan. At times, they haven't even looked that good throughout this run, but they are just resilient as heck. Like, they have won games when they've been trailing. They've fought back after blowing leads. They've won high-scoring games. They've won low-scoring games. You know, they've won games defensively late. They've won games by having to put up points. Johnny Juzang has made – they've won when Johnny Juzang has balled out. They've won when Johnny Juzang shot 5-for-18 from the field. Like, that is what they've done. They've just found ways to win, and certainly did that in both of their Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games. You know, blew the lead at half against Alabama, gave up the buzzer beater to tie it, and then blew away Bama in overtime. Then against Michigan, you hold Michigan to the lowest point total of the year. I was just really impressed by their resolve. And the way they continue to fight, because there are some flaws on this team, without a doubt. But these dudes are just competitors, man, and it showed.
Absolutely. I mean, it was that UCLA Alabama game was one of the best games of the weekend. You know, it was close. We got that Alex Reese shot. You fall off the couch. Hands in the air. But it was hilarious that you check Twitter mid second half. Coming down the stretch, everybody's saying Cody Riley's minus 18. Get Cody Riley out, blah blah blah. And literally, we come back from commercial after seeing that on Twitter, and he rattles off like 4 straight baskets. Some a really really timely play from Cody Riley. Obviously, Johnny Juzang has been incredible. He has one of those shots that you're shocked if it doesn't go in. And you know, he missed some time early in the year. Maybe if UCLA had him, from the start, they could have, done better against like a San Diego State. And then Hawkes didn't have a great game against Michigan, but he's just incredible. You know, he's just a glue guy. He hits shots. He guards power forwards, guards wings. He's all over the place. Really strong player. Really get to the basket. A lot to like there. And then, even some timely plays in overtime of the Alabama game with Singleton hitting some free throws. I think he had a 3 in the overtime as well. So, Jalen Clark, also fantastic. Cronin called him a Cincinnati guy, you know, playing a little small ball 4, running around, rebounding, defending. So they kind of settled into their core 7 or 8 guys, and it's worked out stunningly well.
I mean, Clark was almost playing small ball 5 because it kind of depends on who you want to define as the 5 in the lineup when, like, Hawkes, Bernard, Juzang, and Clark were all on the floor together with no true big. But, you know, they just have time in there as well. Like, there was a lot of times where Jalen Clark was guarding the 5. Like, he was subbing in for Cody Riley and guarding the 5, especially in the Alabama game. And he just made plays. It has been wild to see them. You know, this was not a great defense by any means throughout the season, and they've just bought in defensively when it's mattered and gotten stops when it's mattered. It's helped that they've made some tough shots, like particularly Juzang has made some really tough shots. They're fighters, man, and it has been fun. I will say, I mean, no one wants to hear, oh, future when you're playing in the Final Four, but like, if UCLA can get Johnny Juzang to come back, which I don't think it's a guarantee, but I don't think it's a guarantee that he leaves either. You're talking about running it back with this group, right? Like Hawkes isn't leaving, Bernard's not leaving, Campbell's not going anywhere. You know, you would think Cody Riley's back for one more year. You're going to be able to add pieces as well. Like, I think ETN is going to be a good player for them. You know, the future is bright here. Maybe not as bright as the present, but the future here is impressive with the growth. I think these guys have grown during this run. You know, Campbell has grown during this run. Juzang has improved. I just think it's been fun to watch. You know, these guys really grow up there at the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, a couple of these guys are going to hit the portal. We know that. We don't live under a rock. Jalen Hill, Jake Kyman, and Jules Bernard bounce or something, but they should still have 6, 7, or 8, you know, pretty solid pieces that are bringing in Peyton Watson, the 5-star. So they'll still be good. And, you know, you brought up Etienne, who hasn't got a lot of run. And he looks very small out there, but he is, you know, supposed to be in high school, at least in prep school, at Brewster. That was the plan.
I don't think he's like a true center.
I think he's a center like Joakim Noah, or like he's, you know, besides the hair. He's smaller, but he can really move. He looked pretty mobile out there.
Right. He's not nothing comparable to Cody Riley, who he's backing up when he's going the game. Like UCLA doesn't have anything into the back in the front court. You know, after Riley, you've got Wuba, who's just like five fouls. You've got Etienne, who's just not ready to play in these big games. And you have Clark, who's 6'5". Like, those are the options. But
Hill's pretty good, but Hill's been out. Then obviously Chris Smith, they lost for the season, mid-season, and, you know, people thought he was their best player. I was always a Hawkins guy, and I still am, even with Juzang's recent outburst. But, you know, strong team. I mean, in a couple of weeks or so, when we start diving into these teams next year and transfers start popping, I mean, it's going to be wild. It's going to be fascinating.
Yes.
You know, because we don't even know where we would slot UCLA in a Pac-12 for next year or anything. You know, it's going
to
be crazy.
I have to do a way too early top 25 for...
You can't yet.
But I have to.
You'd be wasting your time. I mean, no one loves too early stuff than me.
It's due Tuesday. I mean, it's got to get done.
It's going to be gobbledygook. It's going to be... I mean, I wanted to retweet my too early one from last year to kind of step on the face of some Virginia people, you know, really, and a UNC people that were chirping me for not having UNC in my too early top 25 last year, and having Virginia, I believe, 17th, you know, the day before the championship, when I always put them out. I'm not doing one this year because the rosters are so in flux, but you can't even retweet it because I had Mississippi State like fifth when I thought they were going to have Reggie Perry and Nick Weatherspoon and Robert Woodard. So I highly doubt people would remember that those guys were still on the team at this point. And it's you know, Mississippi State made the NIT and you had a fifth, but, you know, they lost three guys, you know, two NBA players and a starting point guard, you know. So that's the one that comes to mind, but I'm sure there's a million other examples when you look at yours and it's like, oh, geez, you know, Tyshawn Alexander left, or
right.
Sadiq Bey left. And
I have no illusion, no delusions that it's going to be good, but it has to get done. I'm a corporate shell now, Brad.
I mean, I don't even know where to start.
I don't either. That's my tomorrow task.
How about this? Definitely don't put Virginia in.
Okay.
Team's gutted. I mean, we're looking at Clark, Beekman, Statman, Murphy, and Shedrick.
Yeah.
I don't know what transfers they're going to get. They will get people because everyone's going to get people. And if you don't get people, you should probably show yourself out.
But that is the problem, though, Brad. It's like, if you're doing the way too early, do you have some level of assumption of like, okay, well, there's some core here, and like, you know, they're going to add two or three guys. You can't really do that. That's the whole issue.
Right, and what if, you know, Casey Morcell's best offer is Old Dominion, and he says, you know what, Tony, I think I want to head back for another year, or Justin McCoy, his best offer is Charlotte. He's like, yeah, you know what, I think I'll come back.
But yeah, it is going to be very hard to gauge teams, but I do think UCLA is positioned very well for the future. I don't think they have a great shot against Gonzaga, but at the same time, like, they've just hung in. Like I said, they've been so resilient that you want to believe that they might be in the game. Let's talk about this Gonzaga team. You know, two more dominant wins, no issue with Creighton, no issue with USC, 14-point favorites, according to Bovada at last check for the game against UCLA, the largest spread in the Final Four ever. There was a national championship game that spread that was, I think, 16, back in like 1994 or something like that. But a Final Four game, a national semifinal, has never happened in the modern era. And what did you learn about Gonzaga? I'll frame it that way. What did you learn about Gonzaga from their two wins? One against a kind of spread it out and shoot it team in Creighton, and one against a, you know, more of a pounded inside long athletic team in USC.
I mean, they just overmatched. I mean, I think we're going to look back. Thanksgiving morning, we wake up, we're getting ready to watch Kansas-Gonzaga on Fox. We learn they're going to play through their COVID tests, their COVID positives, and that Andrew Nembhard is eligible. And we're going to say, you know, that's the pivotal moment where the season is, you know, season was won, because with those five guys, those you know, Suggs, Ayayi, Timmy, and Kispert, when you throw in Nembhard, a former five-star, starting point guard on a tournament team, they just have too much firepower. It's just too much. I mean, when you start kind of peeling back the onion a little bit and you get to Watson and Cook and Balo, I mean, those guys aren't very good right now at all. But those that five-man unit is just so perfect. It fits. They're shooting. I mean, once Jalen Suggs starts taking off down court, you perk up in your seat. I mean, he's incredible in transition, incredibly shifty, drives with so much power. Timmy, I don't know how he does it, but he gets the ball in the post, and he's already scored. He doesn't look super big or super quick. He gets it done. Kispert, NBA player. Yeah, he's probably an NBA player. They just have so much juice.
Yeah, they're an incredible, incredible, incredible team. I think the biggest thing that I learned from this just absolutely insane, you know, two blocks against good teams was, look, I think I've underrated Drew Timmy. I'm not, like, Drew Timmy is now the number one player in KenPom's Player of the Year rankings by, like, a pretty long shot. Like I think maybe I'm recency biasing here, but how much different is he if you swapped him and Luka Garza? Like I kind of think Drew Timmy is just as dominant as Luka.
He doesn't have the shooting that Luka does, but he's much more mobile.
Right, much more mobile. I think a better passer as well.
They both have this just, once I get the ball, I've scored.
Right.
And I don't know how you did it. Nate Watson has a little bit of that.
Yes.
Too, down lower. It's just like, I'm just going to like, just do whatever I want and just score. And we don't know how you did it. We don't know how Evan Mobley couldn't stop you last night. Or Christian Bishop, very athletic. Very quick, very versatile big man. Couldn't stop you at all. Mobley, NBA shot blocker, is going to make $100 million. You know, way more than that, probably. Maybe $500 million. I mean, he's going to make a ton of money playing basketball.
Yeah.
Blocking shots, being super athletic. He couldn't stop you. I'm at a loss.
No, it's unbelievable. I mean, I think the biggest thing is, I think they have grown into how to use him the best. Like, I think when you look back and you watch some of the early season non-con games, I think they were still learning how to play altogether. And they're a little bit more guard-driven. And then you watch, you know, Timmy was just cleaning up all the dirty work. And he was great at cleaning up the dirty work. I think he had, like, 26 points against Kansas or something like that, if I recall. And then you'd watch the WCC games. And, all right, they're really playing through Timmy here. But I just kind of assumed that was – well, it's WCC bigs, you know. It's easy to post Timmy up against, you know, whoever Pacific is trotting out at the five. You know, he's going to get his, and we'll move on. But this is what they've done in the NCAA tournament. Like, everything, whenever they're in the half court, the ball is finding Timmy. And he is doing the work. You know, I think he's their best player. I think he's probably going to be an NBA player at this point, right? Like, he can't come back to college, can he? Like, is there anything more for him to do?
Well, I guess if they pass, like, a name, image, likeness, and he can earn.
Right. Mustache, baby.
Yeah. have the mustache. Pretty big fan base in Gonzaga, right? You know, he could earn.
If he's going to be second round pick, the question is how. Like, do we think it's crazy that he'd be a first round pick?
Yes, I'm not sure how he fits in with an NBA team, right? Like, he's going to have to be a backup center.
Unless he's going to start stretching the floor more.
Well, I mean, Sabonis has been incredible. Right. So there's that. Sabonis is not a defender by any stretch, and Sabonis has played a lot of four in the NBA, although he is better at the five. Sabonis can also shoot better than Timmy.
So we've had these conversations kind of throughout the year. I've said it a couple times. Definitely have mentioned on the podcast. I've said it on a ton of different shows and radio hits and whatever. I've said this Gonzaga team is as good as any team in college basketball we've had since the 38-1 Kentucky team, maybe better. Where do you stand? Like compare them to 38-1 Kentucky. Because if they're better than 38-1 Kentucky, like, we have to have a legit conversation. Are they the best team, you know, regardless of what happens this weekend? Are they the best team since, you know, the 90s, the best team since maybe 75-76 Indiana, which went undefeated? Like, I think the barometer has been 38-1 Kentucky.
I mean, I'm not good at kind of putting things in historical context like that. But so I guess we have to see where they end up. But they've beaten, you know, everyone who they've come into contact with this year. They have four NBA players, probably. That Kentucky team had like six or seven, right? Including, and you know, you can say, well, you know, why does that matter for a college team? But if we're trying to contextualize the talent, that Kentucky team had Towns, Devin Booker, right? Euless, the Harrisons, Poitras, Trey Lyles, Cauley-Stein, right?
Yeah.
So that team did have more talent.
Agreed. Although we may look back and say, like, oh, wow, you know, Julian Strother's a pro in 2 years, you know?
Those guys were all pros pretty much right then, though.
True. That's a fair point. I just think, like, when you look at the dominance, like, they haven't even been pushed. Like, the only time they legitimately pushed...
Didn't Pacific push them?
So there was the BYU game where they trailed in the second half, and then they're just like, all right, I think we're going to win now, and just pulled away. There was the Pacific game on the road where they played awful, and I think they were tied at the half, or they might have actually been losing it by one at the half, and then they pulled away in the second half and won by 18. The only time a team has played them to single digits all season long was against West Virginia, again, a 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. And in that game, Jalen Suggs got hurt and was ineffective. Drew Timmy had his worst shooting game of the season. He shot 7-for-17 from the field. And they still won that game against West Virginia with Oscar Tshiebwe. Like, that doesn't – this team has just not even been challenged. And we'll see. I mean, obviously, you know, if they were to blow out UCLA and Baylor, I think that would, you know, certainly seal the fate. But, you know, this is an obviously all-time great team, regardless of what happens here in the next 2 days. And I hope we all appreciate it, because it doesn't come around often. Gonzaga's not going anywhere. Like, they're going to have, you know, as they continue to recruit now at this elite level, like, they're going to be up there with Duke and Kentucky and whatever every single year, and maybe be better. But a team like this doesn't come around often. It takes, you know, a truly special convergence of, you know, two fringe NBA guys coming back in Kispert and Ayayi, one fringe NBA guy in Nembhard transferring into your program, the, you know, an elite second year player in Timmy, and then adding another one and done. Like, that's what it took. And it's been fun to watch. So next up,
I just wanted to touch on two other things.
Sure.
So I'm not equipped to really make this comparison, but you know, maybe someone who is more equipped with the historical context of comparing teams. You know, maybe that Wisconsin team with Kaminsky and maybe the Duke team with Jahlil Okafor and Winslow and everybody, you know, maybe they were way better than the competition that Gonzaga, you know, has had this year. I couldn't tell you. And number two, why do all these five stars now want to go to Gonzaga? Like, I'm not really grasping why Gonzaga as a one-and-done destination.
I think you're
not going to be on national TV as much as if you played at St. John's or Ole Miss.
I mean, I would actually look back on that. Like, they play on national television all the time. Like, this year they're on every day. Every game was on ESPN.
Because they were by far number one.
Right.
I think a lot of years you're going to be 11 o'clock ESPN2.
Yeah.
You're not playing a lot of big games in conference, right? So a lot of that is just kind of going through the motions. It's not in like a destination city, like a UCLA or a USC being in LA. Fan base is strong. It's not huge like a Duke, Kentucky, Nebraska even, right? They have a huge fan base. I just don't necessarily get why, if you're a five-star, you're all of a sudden super interested in going 30-1 but being out of sight for a good chunk of the year.
I mean, I think the bottom line is, like, it's now a cool program, right? Like, you're producing pros, you're on ESPN, you're, you know, winning at a really high level. I still think it takes the right kid and the right mentality. But I think there is and again, the buzzword all the time, culture, culture, culture. But, like, I think there is a culture there that is special, that is different. I know Greg Bishop for Sports Illustrated wrote a great story about the Mondays that the Gonzaga has, the Mondays where they compete against each other, and that they're their biggest test of the year. Or is every weekend on Monday when they play, you know, 5-on-5 and just get out and just dog each other. Like, just
is it starters versus reserves? Or is it mixed?
I think they mix up some and then they go starters and reserves. I have to go through the whole piece. I haven't read it in its entirety. But there's just a culture of competition and a culture of winning that I think makes guys want to go play. I think it doesn't hurt, certainly, to have Jalen Suggs having the success he's having. And Jalen says as open about, you know, how happy he is with the decision. When he could have went anywhere, right? Any college, he could have went to the G, went overseas, he considered those options, he went to Gonzaga, and he's having the time of his life. So I think that's why. Don't have much more on that.
And then on the other side of the bracket, right, we got Baylor Villanova, which was a good game. I mean, Baylor pulls away with some key defensive stops, but Villanova looked like they were in it. They were almost in control for a good portion of the game. It, you know, we kind of jokingly brought it up last podcast, but you can't have R.G. Diacono dribbling up against Davion Mitchell. And I think we were still in single-digit scoring when R.G. Diacono had to do that and end up getting called for a travel. Mitchell's fouls kind of let Villanova get back in, right? And then he really clamped down in the second half. I think people are rightfully talking him up as the better player to Jared Butler at this point. I mean, he's just so quick, so explosive, and can just really guard.
Yeah, I thought Villanova did a really good job of hanging in. Eventually, they just wore down. They couldn't find consistent offense. Only scored 21 points in the second half. But I thought they did a really good job. You know, all things considered, with what they're up against, with, like we said, RTD acting out. I mean, he only played 10 minutes in the game because, like, he was unplayable. And they had to play Slater.
He hit a three, though.
He did.
That's where I was like, whoa, are we building an upset here? You know, first, he gets to travel, and I'm like, oh, geez, here we go. And then knocked down a nice three. I thought it was Swider at first, and then, Chidi Akino.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing was they were going to need a huge game from Robinson Earl, and they got, like, a fine game. And that was it. So and I thought Baylor was impressive in both of its games. Played from behind against Villanova, fought back and won it. You know, played at a faster pace against Arkansas, got out to a strong start, and then hung in despite some really good pushes from Arkansas. I was really impressed with how Arkansas fought and battled and hung in this thing after they got punched in the mouth early. I think the future is so bright under Moss. This kind of hodgepodge team, especially with Moses Moody not playing well, and just guys stepped up and made plays. The activity on the offensive glass. I thought that Devontae Davis continues to really shine. A guy who I think is a super bright future. Same with Jalen Williams. Just two really entertaining games for Baylor. And I think at the end of the day, what impressed me with them, what makes me believe they have a shot against Gonzaga, is they have so many guys who can beat you. Right, like it is going to take Davion Mitchell staying on the floor and having his level of impact on the game for them to beat a team like Gonzaga, no doubt. But it's not just Mitchell and it's not just Jared Butler. I found this stat interesting today. Butler and Mitchell have not led Baylor in scoring once in the NCAA tournament in their four games. Teague has led them in scoring twice.
You were cut out when you gave like the punchline of that stat.
That's tough. Butler and
Mitchell.
They have not led Baylor in scoring in any of the four NCAA tournament games.
There you go.
Two times Maceo Teague, once Adam Flagler, and once Matthew Meyer. And that's not
Matthew
even mentioned.
Meyer's played well, playing a small ball four.
Huh?
Matthew Meyer's played well, playing a small ball four.
Yeah, it's just been impressive to me. And I think it's what makes them have a real chance. Right? Is you're sitting there, you're like, all right, maybe Mitchell doesn't shoot well. All right, we got Flagler off the bench. He's going to hit some big shots. Okay, Matthew Meyer can make some plays. And it's going to require a special effort. I think Flo Thamba and Jonathan Chamwa-Chachua will struggle with Timmy if they get to that point. I think Baylor will struggle with Houston, quite frankly, with the offense on the offensive glass. Everyone will, but especially Baylor because they struggle on the defensive glass. But this backcourt is special. Mitchell's impact on the game goes beyond the numbers. He the only times where it felt like Arkansas had any footing in that game was when Davion was off the floor. When Davion was on the floor, Arkansas was so reactive at all times. I think that would be the best way I could describe it.
And then lastly, right, we got Houston. You mentioned there. Prominence on the glass with Gorham and White and a little bit of Cheney too, just crashing the boards. They won a game earlier against Rutgers on a Tremont Mark offensive rebound and putback. But for me, they iced this game with the guards. Sasser hitting some shots. Jerome making plays, really guarding. Quentin Grimes is a shooter now. Has been a shooter all year, but from where he started as a potential draft prospect at Kansas. He's really polished his game. And
Grimes went from a shooter who couldn't shoot to a shooter who could shoot.
Right. Yeah, he was like, he can do it all as a Kansas guy, but he couldn't shoot. And now he's a guy you want shooting. He's knocking down threes. His stroke is still a little, I guess, compact, but it's not as stiff as it was at Kansas.
No. No, agreed. I've been impressed with Houston
like again, kind of the similar thing with UCLA. Like they haven't always played their best basketball, but they fought. You know, they fought back against Rutgers. Against Syracuse, they just smothered them. Their defense was just too much for Syracuse's unathletic white dudes running around chucking threes. And against Oregon State, the resolve after, you know, they really struggled with the zone. The 1-3-1 look with Warith Alatiche out top, your guy, Brad.
Getting some, he was awesome.
He is awesome. He really is. He's a special player. But you know, they took that punch, and it doesn't matter that they can't shoot the ball. Like that, I think that's the craziest thing. Is like Houston has shot under 40% from the field in every single game they've played so far in this tournament, except for the Cleveland State game. And it hasn't mattered because they get so many second chances. They're so active, and they really defend. And they're probably going to have to shoot 40% or better, you would think, if they're going to be a team like Baylor, if they're going to be a team like Gonzaga. But you have to be impressed with the way they're able to find ways to win, particularly from Gorham and Fabian White, just so, so active and create so many possessions for them and give, you know, guys like Grimes and Sasser shots from three. I mean, it is so dangerous to shoot a three off of an offensive rebound. Like it has always been the case, and it remains that case. I just feel like, and I know there was a big one in the Oregon State game. I think the one that gave them the lead was off an offensive rebound. It was a kickout for an offensive rebound for
Gorham, right?
Yeah, I mean
I can picture Gorham like on the left block getting an offensive rebound, being like a few steps back and kicking it out to like a ball reversal to a Sasser three. I think.
Yeah, it was. It's just unbelievable the job that they do. And they don't want, you know, they don't care about putting shots up. They're just out there grinding, and well deserved for Kelvin Sampson to get back to the Final Four. Really excited about Baylor Houston. Like, I think it's gonna be an awesome game. Right now, Baylor -5 on Bovada. I think that's about right. You know, it should be a really, really entertaining ball game. Who do you like?
I think I'm going to stick Baylor. Even though Houston does have the athletes and the size to really get on the glass, Baylor's a smaller team. They rebound well because Vital's a monster and Chamba Chachua is super mobile and athletic. But you know they are playing some pretty small guards out there. The Jarrell Mitchell matchup is going to be really intense. You know, a couple of really athletic guys, really great defenders. You know, speedy with the ball. Jarrell has the size. It's going to be a great game.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited just to watch the matchup between Jarrell, who is really, really improved. You know, you remember his sophomore year, his first year at Houston.
Hero ball.
Right. It was just, he was such a good scorer. Like, he could really get a bucket. But that was who he was. Like, he was just, all right, I'm going to get one, whatever. And now he's, you know, the point guard. You know, he's setting people up. He's rebounding. He's not worried about getting shots up. You know, he can score. But he has completely changed his game and his mentality from his time at UMass and his early time at Houston. Now, this is just going to be a fun game. You know, I think the higher the score that gets, the higher the score gets, the better for Baylor. I know the over-under over at Bovada is 134. I think that's, you know, if it can stay to that, I think you feel pretty decent if you're Houston. If you could play this game in the 60s, maybe in the low 70s, I think you feel okay. You gotta get this thing to the 70s and 80s if you're Baylor and rely on the shooting. Get out in transition. Do not let this Houston defense get set, because when they set, they are hard to work on. But this matchup between Jarrell and Mitchell, I think Mitchell will win it, mostly because I think Mitchell will be more disruptive to the Houston offense. The Houston offense is so reliant on, you know, Jarrell, Grimes, and Sasser. And I think Mitchell will be more disruptive to that, whereas I think Baylor's a little more well-rounded. But it should be a really entertaining game between two really well-coached teams.
Should we move on to some coaching carousel?
Yes, let us let's do that for sure. First up,
we have Kevin. Did you get your Pulitzer for the Kyle Neptune? Did everyone credit you enough? They all get you in there first.
Rothstein did not give me any credit, so I'm still salt. I don't care. It was great of Jeff and Norlander to do that. I gained a lot of followers because of it. Thanks to them. That was a fun one. That was a cool scoop. Glad that I was able to pull that off. Kind of fun to get like a tangible thing to you feel good about the work you're doing behind the scenes. This one was, I don't want to say done for a while, but you know, it was moving in this direction.
They were waiting for Villanova to get eliminated.
It was moving in this direction for quite some time after, you know, and guys had been out of the search. Like Carm Massarelli, who was involved, was out of the search by the time that, you know, Nep was getting hired. Grosso has kind of pivoted to Fordham, or not Fordham, pivoted to Hofstra. We'll see if he gets Hofstra. They stay internal with Speedy Claxton. That'd be interesting. But no, I think, you know, Neptune, really well respected, but a gamble to go with no head coaching experience. That's the bottom line. Like Ash Howard was really well respected. People liked Baker Dunleavy. It's great, but the Villanova guys have not, you know, traditionally worked out great. So color me a hair skeptical when you could have pulled potentially a sitting head coach. But at the same time, you know, he's a Brooklyn, you know, I think he's a Brooklyn guy. He's going to hire AAU coaches and people in that realm for his staff. And they're going to recruit. And Kyle Neptune's a really sharp basketball mind. Like, that dude should not get pigeonholed as a recruiter. Like, he's not just a recruiter. He's a really good basketball coach, I think. You know, has a chance. It's a tough job, without a doubt. It is a tough job.
Here's the thing. You have guys who have a thing, right? So what's Kyle Neptune's thing going to be, right? With Shaheen Holloway, his pitch, right? His kind of elevator pitches. You know, I was at St. Peter's, the worst facilities in the country, you know, one of the hardest places to recruit. And I brought in these great, you know, the Drame twins, these good local guys. We have depth, we got defense, you know, that's my thing, right? Did a great job at St. Peter's. Jared Grosso, I'm going to hit the transfer portal. I'm going to offer for everybody, you know. We're going to play offense. We got shooters. We got high major guys coming in up to Smithfield, Rhode Island. You know, I can get these guys into this tough place. Bryant plays in a high school gym. What's Kyle Neptune's thing? And I've seen people say, a lot of people say, well, he does most of the recruiting for Villanova. To which I say, congratulations. That's a little different recruiting to Fordham than it is to Villanova. If you're hiring Mr. Neptune for VCU or Dayton, maybe I could see. But I don't think the same recruiting strategies are going to work at Fordham that work to join the championship program of Villanova.
I agree with that. I think that's fair. The thing that's tough about this is, and I think you're getting to it, is my feeling when Fordham opened was, at Fordham, to win, you need a guy who knows how to win at a hard place, right? And that's why I floated Tobin Anderson, Division II coach at St. Thomas Aquinas. Like, he was never going to get that job, realistically. But that's a guy who turned them around from nothing, like literally nothing, and wins 25 games a year in Division II. And again, was that going to be the higher A-10 the Fordham was going to make? Probably not, but dude, that's the type of name. Rob Jones at Norfolk, you know, building a winner there. Jared Grosso, at Bryant. Shaheen at St. Peter's. Like, obviously, there's different reasons why not to hire all of those guys, and there's reasons why Cal Neptune makes a lot of sense.
What are those reasons?
What
are the reasons that Neptune makes sense? Is he's from Brooklyn? He's got a good basketball mind.
A New York guy who ties to Jay Wright, who will be able to recruit higher level city kids, who fits kind of the institutional identity, you know, which is, you know, very cleaned up and academic, and, you know, been in a place that Fordham probably aspires to be like. do all of those things. You know, kills an interview, is very polished. You know, recruits. You know, there's a lot of there. He checks a lot of boxes. He just hasn't done it yet. And Jerry Grosso has done it. And Sheehan Holloway's done it. And Rob Jones has done it. Right. And that's the selling point for me. But look, I'm rooting for him. I hope Knapp does a good job. I hope Fordham becomes relevant, because that'd be a heck of a story. But it's obviously an uphill battle.
I mean, look at Jeff Neubauer, right? He's a laughing stock now. He had his shirt off at practice.
He had the European mistress. You remember this?
No.
His wife was like tweeting about how Jeff Neubauer was like going on recruiting trips overseas, and then like he met a European mistress. He had a mistress over there. It was great.
Maybe he should spend more time recruiting and less time fooling around. But he had some really good Eastern Kentucky teams. Yeah. I don't remember if any of them made the tournament, but I remember watching that Ohio Valley. They had Corey Walden, who ended up being summer league for the Celtics. They had a couple other guards. They got the big with the long hair, who was a solid like defensive center.
They did make the NCAA tournament once, 2013-14. That Corey Walden, Glenn Cozy at point guard. Yeah, they were deep in athletic and forced turnovers. That was their thing.
Yeah, they played four guards around the white dude. I don't remember his name. I'm trying to find it now.
7 years ago, Eric Stutz. All Dad remembers is four guards and a white dude.
Well, he had long hair. His name was Eric Stutz.
I love it. No, Neubauer was legit. That's the thing. Like, Neubauer won 20 games a year for a good 3-4 years and was never bad. Made the NCAA tournament a couple times. Like, yeah. It was a fine hire from a, like, has he won basketball game standpoint. But that's not what all this is, right? Like, it's a very unique challenge. And I think that it's challenging. It's such a unique job. And you need more than just like, oh, I won basketball games at EKU to be able to pull this off. And we'll see if Neptune's the guy. He's going to need to get some upper level players. Like, I think that's going to be the path, is getting some upper level guys who can, you know, play, you know, A-10 plus basketball, and go from there. Maybe not a Pascal, but you need that. You need to use your recruit at that type of level.
And for your first year, blank slate, this is the year to do it.
Oh yeah,
because the transfer portal is a beast. You can check Twitter any hour of the day. I woke up this morning to Gabe Osboyan's back on West Virginia. What was the last one that I screenshotted? Tyreek Locure heading to Alabama, Birmingham. Just scroll through Twitter and there's a roster move. I mean, there's everything imaginable in the portal. I think it's a little short on bigs. Before we jump to the portal a little bit, did you have any more coaching carousel you wanted to talk?
Well, so I'm just trying to think of what's happened since we last spoke. So you've got Ryan Ritter to UT Martin.
Sitting head coach.
Hard to get out of those HBCU jobs. Hard to get out. So good for Ryan Ritter. He is a, you know, really sharp JUCO guy, and that's really important at a place like that in the OVC. So I like that, without a doubt, for him. And I like that for UT Mark. So that was a good one. Denver hired Jeff Wolbrin from Stanford.
Hold on. Wait a second. I remember being on this podcast maybe four weeks ago. And I brought up my favorite term, which is parachute.
Oh, wait.
And you said, stop talking about parachutes. My sources say no one's going to parachute. No one's going to uproot their lives.
Parachute's not going to happen. I didn't say my sources say. I said it just doesn't happen as much as we hope it does.
Doesn't happen. We got to stop talking about it. That was, you know, you were growing frustrated that every week I was trying to parachute somebody somewhere. But we got one, and one that I had suggested, one that I had wanted, one that is a win-win for both sides. Both sides are thrilled. and that is Shaka Smart to Marquette. The guy has built a top 10 team. He can recruit. He had tons of success at VCU. The tournament's just variance. What's important is building a strong regular season team that's always going to give you a chance. Shaka can do that. He can certainly do that at Marquette. Wojo, see you later. Texas fans are thrilled. And what made me think of that was we got another parachute in the majors where we got Matt Figgers leaving Austin Peay going to Rio Grande Valley after winning like 2/3 of his conference games at Austin Peay. He's off to the new look WAC.
Yeah, my brain wasn't working as to when openings have happened. We have to talk about Indiana. We have to talk about Marquette. So bottom line with the Marquette thing and Shaka, it was a smart parachute because Shaka was getting fired.
Absolutely. It was the only move.
Like, he was getting
Minnesota
fired.
Is sitting there just kicking themselves.
Yes. So Shaka Smart off to Marquette. I think it's a good hire. Like, I'm a little bit so the only thing I will say is, like, Wojo, bottom line, Wojo got fired because he didn't win games in the NCAA tournament. Right? Like, he would have had a lot more leeway for a year like this year had it not been for the lack of NCAA tournament wins. So hiring a guy who struggled in the NCAA tournament? Questionable. But at the same time, Shaka significantly increases your floor. I'm not sure that Marquette actually wanted to fire Wojo. From what I was told, Marquette wanted Wojo to shake up the staff. And Wojo said no. And he said and the AD said, well, I'm gonna have to fire you if you don't shake up your staff. He said, fire me. They said, okay. So they fired Wojo. So I don't know if this is what Marquette wanted to do, but they got to the point where they had to do it, and they wind up with a much better coach in Shaka Smart. A guy who will get them good players, a guy who will coach them up well, who will develop players, who will have some NBA guys, and who will keep them respectable, right? Like, they will be consistently top five in this conference, top five, top four in the Big East. And at a place that's probably the best job in the league behind Villanova, some people would say it's the best job in the league regardless because it has unlimited resources. It's a good hire for sure. I think I would have been swayed by Porter Mosier, the dream of that and his NCAA tournament success. But Shaka is about as good as you could do if you're a place like Marquette, and you sign for it every day.
I mean, look at his tournament losses, though. If I remember, hopefully I'm remembering all these right. So we have this year kind of a fluke loss, upset to Abilene Christian. But you know, great team, 3 seed. Then we have the Mo Bamba team loses an overtime thriller to Eric Musselman in Nevada.
Yes.
And then was the one before, was that the Paul Jesperson half-court buzzer beater to beat him?
That's correct. Those are the 3 NCAA tournament losses.
So that smells like variance to me.
But you lost to three mid-majors. As the higher seed in two of them, and the second one and the third one was a 7-10 game. That's not good, no matter how you
spell. And they were a victim of their own success with the one and done bigs.
Well, let's just be careful here, because they lost first round in the NCAA tournament as a 7 seed to Ohio State. Shaka's last year, Ohio State was a 10 seed. They lost as a 5 seed to Stephen F. Austin in the first round. They lost in the second round.
4-point play.
Yes. They lost in the second round as a 5 seed against Michigan, who was a 4 seed. They did pull, I believe, one upset as a 12 seed, 12 over 5, over Wichita State the year after the Final Four. But, you know, they didn't Shaka didn't kill it in the NCAA tournament at VCU other than the Final Four run, which is quite the, you know, disclaimer. But it's still worth mentioning. I agree. Like, bottom line, Shaka could win a lot of NCAA tournament games here. Even if he doesn't, at some point, like, he's clearly going to do better than Wojo, right? Like, he's going to be more consistently winning. And I think if you're Marquette, you sign for that every day. And I think the other thing you have to consider, Brad, here is, like, let's compare to the other hires that have been made, right? Like, in terms of experience. Obviously, you know, things might work great for Ben Johnson. Things might work great for Mike Woodson. Things might work great for you know, some of the other hires, you know, Earl Grant. But, you know, if you're Marquette, you pulled a guy who's been to a Final Four and who has produced a lot of NBA players and has won every year wherever he's been, never had a horrible year except the second year in Texas. Like, you could do a whole lot worse in a search, especially this year.
Yeah, when his best player and NBA prospect had cancer.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah, they've had a lot of weird rolls of the dice at Texas. I'm convinced that this is undeniably Shaka's a better coach than Wojo. There's not even like a you know anything you could even say for that. And so far they've only lost Jonas Adu and Torrance. But I mean, who cares about Torrance?
Torrance is leaving either way. Yeah,
McEwen and Kane are extra yeared in the portal. You know, maybe one of them or two of them come back, but I guess David Joplin is from Wisconsin, so maybe he follows Shaka to Marquette. But I believe Shaka recruited Dawson Garcia at Texas, and Texas was a finalist for him, so I think he's probably going to stay. And then I guess we'll wait to see if Stevie Mitchell and Cam Jones stick around. But one or two ads from the portal, and you know, Marquette's got a solid roster for next year.
Yeah, agreed. Let's move on to the other big one. There's one more in Utah that we should touch on that's a high major. But Indiana with Mike Woodson, kind of unanimously panned all at once by like the, you know, the big media types, myself included. Some people are like, oh, well, you know, remember, Mike Woodson is actually smart about basketball, probably smarter than most college basketball coaches, so he'll be fine. But, like, that's not what this job is. The job of a college basketball coach, especially the job of an Indiana college basketball coach, is so much more than coaching basketball games. And how he navigates all of that, I think, is the bigger question than what he can do on the basketball court. Do you think this Thad Mata hire alongside him as the associate AD for basketball will be beneficial and smart? I do think keeping Kenya Hunter on staff as a guy who can get players is smart. That said, skeptical of this one, primarily because the only way Mike Woodson gets a look for this job is because he's an Indiana guy, right? Like, Mike Woodson would not be a candidate for this job if he was a Minnesota alum. That's the bottom line.
Well, here's the thing. You know, people pointing to, oh, look how Juwan Howard and Penny Hardaway have done. First of all, they have big brands, right? What's Mike Woodson's brand?
Mike Woodson's brand is his goatee.
People know the Fab Five. People know Penny, right?
Right.
Kids know the Fab Five and no Penny. I don't know if they know the Knicks coach from 7 years ago. You know, he built a good Knicks team, right? That was a team that was like a 2 or 3 seed in the East. Some of those Hawk teams he had were good. But I just don't, you know, kind of like what I was saying for Kyle Neptune, like what's Kyle Neptune's thing, right? Like what's Mike Woodson's draw? It seems to me that the more apt comparison would be like Avery Johnson than it would be Juwan Howard.
Yes, and I think Avery Johnson is the right comparison.
Avery Johnson worked okay. They got some good players. They built a couple solid teams. Made NCAA tournament with Colin Sexton, right? But just never really got over the hump, and ended with a NIT loss to Norfolk. And it seemed like he just wanted to get out of there.
Yeah, I think that's the right comparison, right? Like a guy who had some NBA success.
NBA Coach of the Year.
Right. Was coming back to, you know, a big brand job and just couldn't quite put together what it was going to take to win in college. Like everything that went into it. Like Those dudes had quit on Avery Johnson at the end. And I just don't know how Mike Woodson's going to handle, you know, keeping everyone engaged in a college program. You know, dealing with the portal, dealing with, you know, the personalities of 18 to 22-year-olds. That's a challenge. It's really hard. And it's going to be challenging for him to deal with. And I think the hope is that you get the best of both worlds of he's a sell to recruits because he can say, look how many NBA players I coached. And he's a sell to parents and boosters because he's Mike Woodson, right? Like, that's the hope. But at the same time, like, Mike Woodson is, like, he's boring. Right? Like, there's nothing exciting about Mike Woodson. It's just, you know, he's just a guy. He's just a guy. And like the PR list that Andy Katz put out of like, oh, look, he coached 37 NBA All-Stars. It's like, great. Congrats. And I'm seeing Indiana fans on Twitter being like, oh, well, you know, it's going to be a great recruiting tool. And he'll be sitting in living rooms and he'll say, oh, you know, you want to be like Carmelo Anthony? Hold on, I'll FaceTime Carmelo Anthony. Like, folks, every big time college coach has a tie with some big NBA player, right? Like, do you think Juwan Howard has no ability to do that? You think that Tom Izzo has no ability to call Draymond Green, right? Like, every big coach has a pull. And my biggest thing is like, how is Mike Woodson ever getting over the hump of being better than Juwan Howard? Like, what recruit is on the fence and says, you know what? Mike Woodson's sale is more compelling than Juwan Howard's.
Well, Juwan Howard's sales pitch might be too good, where they got too many good players.
Right. So you're getting the next best group, right? But that's Indiana. Well,
it still could be a good group. I mean, Archie Miller grabbed the Christian Lander, 5-star recruit. Trace Jackson Davis, 5-star recruit. I think it'll be fine. I think it'll be a fine hire. I think they'll probably make an NCAA tournament eventually. But they will not reach Indiana expectations, that's for sure. And I don't know if he's gonna be better than Archie Miller, you know. They have a lot to work with, where they have 7 open spots right now. Parker Stewart's back. That 7 does not include Trace Jackson Davis, who I'm sure is gone. But you know, maybe if Race Thompson comes back, if Armon Franklin comes back, you get 2 transfers. Yeah, you could have a decent group. You know, you could maybe. You know, we might be saying this about every team. That's why it's going to be so important when the dust clears to, you know, kind of do an audit and really put together a preseason tournament field and rank the conferences and everything. Because you might be able to say that about every team. You know,
right.
They got these grad transfers, this core is back, and you know they could be rocking and rolling.
100%. I think the way we would both frame it right is like, it's possible it works, but we're skeptical.
I'm sure it's fine, but it's not what you want.
Like fine.
Indiana fans Archie do not fine. Want this.
Archie was fine. One hire I also really liked, Utah with Craig Smith. I know there was buzz, you know, maybe Johnny Bryant. I was told Johnny Bryant was never taking that job. Like, he was never interested in coming back to college basketball. Just wanted to, you know, wants to stay in the NBA. Will be an NBA coach with the Knicks. Obviously, Alex Jensen was also involved in some form or another. That didn't work out either. You wind up with Craig Smith, who was sitting in your backyard, was like the obvious candidate from the start. Was always going to take the job because it's a by far a better job, with, you know, double the money, whatever. And a proven winner. A guy who has done a fantastic job at Utah State, built 3 at-large caliber teams in 3 years. Like last year's team might have been close to the bubble, but probably was getting in.
They won the tournament.
Right. If they hadn't beat the San Diego State. But you know, a clear at-large team in year 1, this year got an at-large bid. Like you can't ask for more than that. And obviously, you know, he was very critical to the operation. I believe under Tim Miles at Nebraska, might have been Colorado State, one of the two. Wherever he was with Tim Miles, he was very critical to the operation. He won 48 games in his final 2 years at South Dakota, spent 4 years there, did a really good job, recruited an NBA player in Matt Mooney, some other really solid players like Tyler Hagedorn, who was really good, Trey Burks Manning was really good. So I think this is a really good hire. I think Craig Smith's going to win there. He's going to be able to, you know, recruit some bigger talent that he would have gotten at Utah State, but also, you know, stick to those roots of like, okay, I'm going to take an international kid. I'm going to take, you know, a developmental prospect. I'm going to take, you know, a kid on, coming off a mission. You know, I think it makes a lot of sense to go this route at Utah.
Absolutely. And, you know, Utah has had a lot of success with the foreign big man, right, with Jakob Poeltl. We'll see it. You know, Craig Smith, the 3 years at Utah State, he had Namius Keita for all three of them. So we'll see if he can pull another guy out of Europe, out of Asia, somewhere. Try to keep the international train rolling. Yeah, that's all you can ask for in hire. I mean, a weird level of success at a, you know, a job you wouldn't expect. No one expects Utah State to be 3 years in a row making the tournament. So that's really promising. You really couldn't go wrong, at least in my opinion, with any of those Mountain West guys. But Smith has done so well that I think you can put him ahead of, you know, you can logically put him ahead of Medved or Dutcher or any of those guys. So
yeah,
very good hire.
And then jobs that are open now. I don't think there's any other like things that have been filled in recent days we need to touch on. Jobs are open now. Actually one more. Oklahoma opened. Juan Kruger retired. Good for him. Stepping away. A legend in this thing. You know, deserves all the praises. Carlin Hartman, their top assistant, had a look for the head coaching job. He's now going with Kevin Kruger to UNLV. Carlin Hartman, a star, was on the podcast over the summer. Shout out to Carlin Hartman. Yeah. So you Oklahoma open. We'll see where they go. Texas open. We'll see where they go. Other jobs that are open. DePaul, I think, coming down to the wire here. Should know relatively shortly. I know Adam Zagoria just said that Tony Stubblefield from Oregon is in the mix. Associate head coach. We'll see if that gets done. I know there, you know, Dennis Gates has been involved there. Some other potential Division I sitting head coaches involved as well. So keep an eye out. You have Austin Peay open as of now. I know Nate James, the associate head coach at Duke, was getting floated there, which I think is just like would be a hilarious hire. Like, can you imagine Nate James like walking into like a JUCO showcase and being like, hey, you know, I used to be at Duke. Now I'm at Austin Peay making 250 grand a year. What's up? I know Austin Klontz from Nicholls State has also interviewed for that job, or is interviewing. I don't think he's interviewed at the time of airing, but you know, will interview. What else? Other jobs. Hofstra, I mentioned Jerry Grasso. I mentioned Speedy Claxton. Matt Ferrelli also in the mix, the interim head coach, but it sounds like Claxton might be in the lead comparative to Ferrelli for an internal hire, which is interesting. What else? Other jobs. Matt Figger.
College of Charleston went with Pat Kelsey. We'll see if he ends up backing out or not. That's
He's in.
Frequently used joke of the day. But
Locked in for good. I mean, it's a great hire. Like, speaks to the value of the Charleston job.
We're thinking maybe Ryan Odom, maybe Lavelle Moten, but going with Pat Kelsey after building a really good Winthrop team.
Yep. Let's see. Other mid-major jobs. Lamar is open. I've heard Alvin Brooks III's name there from Baylor. So keep an eye out there.
Baylor coaches are on fire.
I know. Well, and Jerome Tang is too good to take a job. That's the crazy thing. Like, he's in, like, wait for Scott Drew to leave or get myself a Big 12 job. Like, that's
what how. If, like, Grant McCaslin goes to Oklahoma, whether you want North Texas, that's a
pretty North good Texas, it sounds like North Texas is going to hire internal with Ross Hodge if Grant McCaslin takes Oklahoma or takes Texas Tech, if Chris Beard takes Texas, et cetera. That's the word on the street.
Oh.
Yes. And well-deserved. Ross Hodge is an elite coach. elite level coach. What else? Any other coaching jobs we need to discuss on this show, Brad, before we move on to some general transfer portal conversation?
No. Okay, transfer portal. This transfer portal is great for college basketball. It's great. People say it's concerning, it's bad. No, it's different. You're not used to it. But this is great. I think as you look through, you know, the relevant teams, there are some exceptions, mostly around coaching changes. But for the most part, the relevant teams are keeping their cores intact. They're losing, like, the back ends of their core. Like, Haynes is losing Tristan Enarunna, who would have played, would have been a rotation guy, would have played more next year. But at the end of the day, he's still behind Jalen Wilson. He's still their seventh man. And now he can go and be the starting power forward somewhere else. We're seeing a lot of that, right? Greg Gant leaving Providence. Now he can go to NC State. Maybe he starts, maybe he comes off the bench. But Providence probably isn't losing too much sleep over that. All, you know, as you look up and down these schools, Duke with Jamin Brakefield, they're losing guys, they're losing talented guys, but for the most part, they're in a position where they can add to their core. You can add an Al Durham if you're Providence. You can add a Kellen Grady if you're Kentucky. Really plug some holes, make your team more complete, make your team more competitive, and the talent is flowing. It's flowing in the right direction. The mid-majors are going to be crushed, but who cares? Talent's flowing up, and I'm loving every second of it. And I think the people who are saying this is like the death of college basketball, one, you're not grasping that we gave a free year to people. And you know, Joe from Western Carolina, who averaged 12 points a game, he's not saying, you know what, I really want to get a year ahead on selling solar panels, cold calling. I think I'm going to try another year of college basketball. The number is inflated because we added so many people. And the people who can come back don't even count toward the scholarship limit. So a guy who was going to be the ninth man or the eighth man is now going to be the 11th man. He's not sticking around. I mean, people need to have some perspective here.
So my only feeling is this. I think from a perspective, like, the games will be generally more entertaining and teams will be more talented. You're 100% right. I think the point you are missing when people say, oh, it's bad for college basketball, is, like, it's objectively not fun for the average college basketball fan. Like, me and you love sitting through, scrolling through verbal commits, scrolling through whatever, being like, you know, playing fantasy basketball, being like, oh, yeah, you know, Providence just needs to plug in Al Durham and plug in here. You know, Siena just needs to plug in Devonte Gaines and, you know, whoever, and we'll be good. Right? Like, that's great. But people, like, college basketball fans, like casuals, they like continuity. They like getting old, you know?
No, but here's why I think that doesn't matter. Is that the most of the casual fan is team specific, right? I'm a Kansas fan. I watch every Kansas game. I watch a few other Big 12 games, maybe the big game of the week, and that's it, right? Well, Kansas is going to probably bring back three or four starters and their sixth man, right? They're bringing back five or six of their rotation guys. So it's going to feel like there's more turnover than it is, when really they're just losing Grant Foster, who's out of the rotation, Muscadine was out of the rotation, Enarunna was number eight, right? Silvio D'Souza leaves in the preseason, right? So you're losing four guys. One of them was in the rotation, and you're bringing everyone else back.
Right, but that's not the case at every program, right? Like,
it is in most programs. Which major programs are losing significant pieces of their core, where their team is either going to be, one, worse, or two, completely different?
Northwestern's losing Miller Kopp. Florida's losing Noah Locke. I mean, there's like a lot of teams are losing starters.
I mean, you just named two.
I mean, I could go there's 1,100 guys in the portal, Brad. It's kind of hard to pull it all off.
Okay, Providence is not going to lose a starter. Duke is not going to lose a starter to transfer. Michigan State loses lots, but they get Tyson Walker and they get
Mitch. Is that what guys want? Like, is that what fans want? Do fans want, oh, great, we got Tyson Walker and hired gun, or do they enjoy watching?
They want to win.
Of course.
They want a better team.
Of course.
I mean, find a Michigan State fan who's not excited about Tyson Walker joining the club.
Of course. That's fine. I don't know. I just think you do lose something for sure. But I don't know. Well, I think without a doubt, like this is going to be transformative this season. Like rosters are changing every day. Like, and again, you know, everybody publishes like the anonymous coach quote, like, oh, the portal is nuts. Oh, you know, kids are going doing dumb shit. Oh, you know, kids don't know what they're doing. Kids are getting bad advice. Like all of these things are probably true. But like at the bottom line, like there is going to be a lot of good players to be gotten. And I think we've seen some programs do a really good job of capitalizing on it and being aggressive, especially, and we've talked about this in the past. I've tweeted about it, you know, mid majors getting like fringe high major guys. I think they've done a really good job. Like George Washington, you know, has gotten Joe Bamisile from Virginia Tech on this come down former top 75 recruit after 1 year. Brendan Adams from UConn, like a rotation player for an NCAA tournament team. Ira Lee, rotation player on decent Arizona teams. San Diego got Terrell Brown, you know, starting center in the ACC. Jace Townsend, you know, 20-point game score in the Summit League, probably goes high major every other year. You know, they're on some other guys as well. Like, you're seeing the talent, you know, trickle up a little bit more than it normally does. Or I guess trickle down would be the better way. But it's trickling up and down. I think it's cool to watch the transfers. I think it'll be cool to add guys like Tyson Walker and Kellen Grady to high majors and see how they fit. That said, like, I do think – I really do believe that you will see some, like, real struggles with this, right? And we've seen it, I think, already with some of the guys who've left last year and are now going back down, right? Like, Jariah Horn was productive, so I'm not going to – He was fine, but he's going back to Tulsa.
Why did God told him? He said that he had prayed on it, and God told him to go back to Tulsa.
Right, yeah. But so does that mean he was happy at Colorado? Was that, you know, like Kevin Marfo, star at Quinnipiac, transfers to Texas A&M, terrible at A&M, back to Quinnipiac. I tweeted about this Mac exodus from last year. Kevin Marfo, Domencio Vaughn, Aaron Estrada, Rich Kelly, Fred Scott, Ray Salnave, Polly Polycap, Don Carey. Marfo, complete bust, back to Quinnipiac. Domencio Vaughn, complete bust, probably going back to the Mac or, you know, that similar level. Aaron Estrada, complete bust, played 2 minutes all of month of February and March. Rich Kelly, actually good, but in the portal because BC was bad and fired the coach. Fred Scott, played 9 games, got injured. Ray Salnave, terrible. Pauly Polycap, actually pretty solid in the portal. Ray Salnave, also in the portal. Don Carey, solid, right? Like, you have some that worked okay. Some that worked okay but weren't good fits for whatever reason, so they're transferring again. Like, I guess that's my point. Like, if you're, you know, if you're Kevin Marfo, you probably didn't have a lot of fun at A&M this year.
No.
Right? Like, and I think that is the Kevin Marfo story is the story that, like, every coach is complaining about when you see these, you know, these anonymous tweets from coaches. It's like,
he gave it a shot, though. You know, he had a great year. He wanted to be the starting center for SEC team. He gave it a shot. Didn't work out, and he goes back where he comes from.
We discussed this. Marfo. Everyone in the Mac watched Kevin Marfo and said, like, he's not that good.
But if you're Kevin Marfo, you just had that great year. Wouldn't you want to try at least to go to that next level and see if you can stick?
Maybe. But you also don't want to mess with Happ.
And then, as an aside, did Aaron Estrada leave? I didn't see that one.
Did he leave Oregon?
Yeah.
No, no, no. Not yet. But he could. Yeah. So that's my feelings on the portal. Like, we're headed towards at least like 1,700, I would say, names in this thing. So much.
I don't think we'll get that high.
But we're already at 1,100. It's not even, you know. Think about how many.
I mean, maybe with every senior going in just to see, but I mean, we're running out of dudes that are going to want to transfer.
But think about how many guys went in late last year. Like, we had a pretty consistent, you know, faucet into late April and May and even June.
There were some big guys, but were there a lot of guys?
I mean, there were still runoffs and guys who decided whatever. And again, some of these guys who were quote unquote in the portal, like, it's just different.
It's weird because like the Colorado guys all go in the portal, like they all were good. You know, they all played. I guess maybe Tad told them like, "I've already built the roster this way. Sorry, but that seems kind of hard to believe." But
yeah,
you know, like Schwartz, Walton even played some. Horn, you know, like three of the top what, 7-8 guys.
Well, here's a breaking portal name as we record the podcast. Christian Bishop.
To the portal?
Yeah.
Woo. That's a big one.
Very big.
Yeah, Creighton's got to be done for. How are they going to recruit?
You would think it'll be hard. I will say it won't be as hard as it was for – it will be for ETSU.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Talk about a disaster. The story's still kind of fully flushing its way out, but at this point, I've been told by multiple sources, a significant booster at ETSU pulled all money, including benefits for coaches. The one story I was told is that the guy owns a car dealership, and he took the coaches' cars once the players kneeled for the national anthem. And they then
took their like company their cars?
Vehicles, yeah.
Oh my God.
So because the team kneeled for the national anthem. And then said that the money wasn't coming back into the program until Mr. Jason Shea was let go, and Jason Shea resigned, and you know, I don't think Jason Shea had a choice. Very unfortunate situation, and certainly not something that will play well on the recruiting trail. But obviously, bigger than that, and thinking of Jason Shea, I hope he lands on his feet because that was a horrible situation. Yeah, horrible, horribly messy situation. Certainly. So now the portal is going to continue to get wild. One team that has actually done a really nice job with it. How about Kansas State?
Yeah.
Sitting here, Marquise Noel,
Smith, and Marquise Noel. Yeah,
I mean, you're sitting there. You're at Noel Smith, Nigel Pack, Mike McGurl, who's coming back. Got to go get a transfer big guy. Need a good one out of the portal, and maybe you're okay.
Yeah, they could use like a combo forward, which a lot of teams could use.
Yes,
but you know, even with that. Is that keeping up with the arms race that's coming in the Big 12, you know?
Yes.
Kansas still has a scholarship left. That I guess that might go to, like, Brandon McKissick or somebody, but so they're not done making improvements. Baylor hasn't even started their offseason yet. Well, yeah, that could be a transfer destination if, like, Davion Mitchell leaves early. You know, they could pull a really big, you know, really big fish. Texas has, you know, Texas doesn't have a coach. Texas Tech might need a coach. A lot up in the air.
Yes. Agreed. So how about this? If, and they unfortunately do not, but they should, if our friends over at Bovada were to offer a over-under of 1,700 names in the portal, would you bet the over or the under?
Under.
Under. I'm on the over.
Okay, so since that discussion, I've been scrolling through my depth charts looking for the teams that have really taken a hit from the transfer portal. And I'm not quite finished, but I'm getting to enough mid-major teams that I think I am, for the most part, finished. It's really not that bad. Most of the stuff is tied to, like, weird coaching stuff. So I guess we have some borderline ones, where, like, teams lost one starter. Like, Florida lost Noah Block. UNC lost Walker Kessler, who might have been a starter, might have not been. West Virginia loses Emmett Matthews. I guess you could consider Virginia, although I'm not sure how much Virginia fans are upset about Justin McCoy and Casey Morcell leaving. And then Missouri loses Xavier Pinson.
And Torrance Watson.
Did they really care about Torrance Watson that much? But
not at this point, but he would have played more than Pinson was leaving. Was a key player early in his career.
So, I'm not quite at the bottom as I said, but so then here we have the teams that have weird coaching stuff going on. Okay, we got obviously Minnesota with a new hire. We have Penn State with a new hire. We have Indiana with a new hire. We have Cincinnati with whatever the hell going on over there.
I think there will be a new hire eventually, from what I've been told. Just a matter of when.
And then we get I guess this is kind of a coaching one too with Syracuse. That the curmudgeon Boeheim is just torpedoing the program so he can coach both his sons in his last year. And then we have the weird ones, the kind of surprising ones, which would be Pitt, Miami, St. John's and Memphis. But that's really it.
Right. I just think
Utah's coaching.
But it's still coming. Like, it's still coming. Like, it's not done. It's not even the Final Four is in here. Like, it's April 1st. Like St. John's has lost half of its roster. Memphis has lost three key guys.
Memphis still has, though, they still have Lomax, Nolly, Quinones, DeAndre Williams, and Malcolm Dandridge that they can throw out there, which is still pretty, plus five-star Josh Minot, or Minot, whatever his name is, coming off the bench. So they still have some horses there.
Thank you. That is true. But, it's active for sure. It's only going to continue to be active, like we said, with a guy like Bishop hitting the portal. Legit, very good starters at the high major level and just kind of moving laterally and switching around fits. And I just don't know where Bishop's going to find a better fit. I mean, obviously, the McDermott thing is its own thing. And, because of that, I totally respect it, whatever. But, it's just, from style of play standpoint, I think Bishop did really well with Creighton. And sad to see him somewhere else. So,
yeah, he's a center.
Yes. Yes. Anything else you want to mention on this podcast?
I like the Al Durham for Providence. I know
Great one. We
were talking, maybe years now, how I liked Durham more and you liked too. Franklin, was it more? I don't remember, but I was always an Al Durham guy, so I'm happy he's coming in.
I think the thing that frustrated me about Durham was he wasn't getting significantly better over time. Right, he had that sophomore year where he was good. And that was, the second year of Archie, he's a starter. And you're like, all right, when is he going to break out and be a 15-point game guy? And he just never quite stepped up to that. But, in the Big East, if David Duke comes back, which haven't heard so far is good news. No news is good news on these things. You're talking about what you could do. You could play no point guard if you wanted to and play Durham and Duke together. But you could also play, point guard, to Bynum theoretically.
Ugh.
Duke, Durham. I know, sorry. Or Breed. Yeah. Point guard, Duke, Durham, a four, and then
your big guy and Nate Watson. And Durham-Duke-Watson is probably an NCAA tournament core.
I think how the roster stands right now would be Duke, Durham, Reeves, Hookler, and Watson.
Yeah, Reeves, yeah.
But I do want – I want Earl Timberlake.
Get a four. Yeah, get a four.
See, Hookler can't be a four, right? Jimmy Nichols can't be a four. A power forward is a strong, athletic, versatile guy who can dribble, right? It's Earl Timberlake. It's Alpha Diallo. It's Damian Jefferson, right? Those are power forwards, not these stretch jump shooting fours. Get out of here. You know, the power forward has to be able to guard three positions, you know.
Yes.
Even like a Greg Brown can be a four, but
especially nowadays, yes.
Yeah, we need athleticism. You know, we need versatility. We need the ability to dribble. You know, that's a power forward.
I mean, what would you think of like Aaron Wheeler?
No, he can't dribble.
I mean, yeah, but he can switch and he can stretch the floor. In theory.
No, we need someone better than Purdue's backup power forward. We didn't want him the first time. Sure. Supposedly he wanted to come, but it was too crowded. Too crowded with Alpha Diallo and well, that team had Bullock and yeah. Know, a lot of
Jalen Lindsey. Yeah.
Jalen Lindsey, Isaiah Jackson and Jerry Reeves and David Duke coming through and
a million force.
Jared Roden, that's yeah.
Yes.
Keon Brooks, these are power forwards. Micah Peavy.
I need someone to talk about me like Brad talks about his ideal power forward.
DeAndre Davis, that's a
power forward. That's a power forward right there, man.
Gino Marua.
Oh yeah, great power forward.
But you know, guys, that's like Brandon Johns. Like go play center. Come on. As well as Tabellus, go play center. There's some Brooks.
I love it. All right, let's do quick picks. Final Four and national champion.
Gonzaga over Baylor.
Okay. I agree with you. Gonzaga's going to do it. They're going to be the first undefeated national champion since Indiana in 1976. And that'll be cool. So anything else to add, Brad, before we wrap up this here podcast?
Tyrese Martin, that could be a power forward.
the worst part for all of you listening is that we're going to get off this podcast and Brad is going to just continue to list off every single power forward that he likes in college basketball.
Aaron Henry.
For like 10 minutes.
Aaron Henry is a power forward.
It's great. All right, folks. We will see you all on the other side. We appreciate all of your support all season long. Appreciate all the players and coaches and everyone who sacrificed to get us to this point. Wildly successful college basketball season through it all. So we will see you all next week.